Content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Anna Kogal from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I shall be reading to you from the January 2018 Glamour magazine. Today's programming is underwritten with support from the Raleigh Kiwanis Foundation. They can be reached by kiwanisfoundation.org. Well, welcome back. Happy 2018 yet again. Today is January 11th, 2018. Are you still writing 2017 on every paper you write on? Yeah, me too. All right, so the January 2018 Glamour magazine has some awesome articles in it. And the first one we're going to start off with is entitled, You're Here for the Hacks, Effort Level 1. These are all sorts of cool things to do in 2018. It's called Take Your 2018 Up a Level. We want you to live your best 2018, and we know that you want to live your best 2018. But that doesn't necessarily mean you want to put all that much work into it. Or maybe you do. Either way is cool. Regardless of the amount of effort you're willing to exert, we have your playbook for getting SH*T done. Looking totally on it and crushing the next 12 months, not to be mistaken for resolutions, BTW. These moves can be taken a la carte for one-time use or bookmarked for general know-how. Here's how the game works. Start at level one for low effort tips that will help you shine. Continue to level two if you're down to put in some work, and go up to level three for some seriously advanced maneuvers. Plus, look out for life hacks from crazy impressive women along the way. May the best woman win. All right, and it says learn skills, impress friends, reign supreme. All right, how to take your 2018 up a level. All right, effort level one, you're here for the hacks. If you don't have the desire energy to make a big commitment to self-improvement, these moves help you zzz things up a bit. After all, bringing store-bought mac and cheese to a potluck in a pretty serving bowl, throwing a little sea salt on top and saying, it's a secret recipe, works, right? We'll answer that. It does. Definitely does. How to, number one, make your house look clean in 5 minutes. Some of us are too busy to tidy our living spaces or even bothered by those dust balls. Fair enough. For instance, as a slob, I currently have one sock in my purse. Why? Who knows? But sometimes you need to fake being a clean and organized person, like when people come over, and fast. Luckily, Dana K. White, author of How to Manage Your Home Without Losing Your Mind, gave us her easiest strategies for making your place look fit for humans. Focus on what's in plain sight. As White explains it, go to your front door, look around, and think, okay, what are my guests going to see? The answer, random surfaces, think countertops and shelves. So declutter. White suggests stashing things like toasters and blenders that won't be used while your guests are over. And do a quick wipe down. If your surfaces are clear, people will assume your house is under control. Next, fluff. Walk through your house the way your guests would, straightening and fluffing as you go, says White. Hit any room they might visit, kitchen, bathroom, etc., to catch last-minute messes and, quote, bring along a trash bag to throw away garbage and things you don't need, end quote. Stick to the path of least resistance. If your ceiling fan is dirty, just turn it on so no one can tell. And if all else fails, move stuff into the master bedroom, says White. Nobody goes into a locked master bedroom. it can stay filthy. Now, who can't manage that? And that's by Rebecca Harrington. All right, next one, how to disguise your dirty hair. So you haven't shampooed in 6 days? Celebrity hairstylist Justine Marjan has your fix. You woke up late and your hair is super oily. Your first option, of course, is dry shampoo. But if you're out, try the brushed back look. It's great for short hair that can't fit into an updo. Spray your brush with a little hairspray like Tresemme 2 hairspray, which is $5 at Target.com, and go to town. Then tuck hair behind your ears and leave the rest down. You overloaded on styling products and now your hair is caked with them. Sweep it into a top knot. Whatever product is already in there will give your pony texture, so no need to add more. Spritz hair with some water to reactivate the existing product, then twist it into a knot and pin it into place. You go outside. Humidity is crazy, and the sweat and frizz have taken over. Braid it back. For texture that's looking out of control, add a shine serum first, like L'Oreal Paris Ever Sleek Frizz Finish Serum, $10, L'Oreal Paris USA.com. And to get frizz out of your face, braid along your hairline. And that's by Erin Rimmel. Life hack. I keep a tiny Maldon salt in my purse because table salt is not the deal. My salt even has its own little velvet pouch. Everything lives a life of luxury with me. And that's from Tracy Ellis Ross, star of Blackish. All right, now, how to act like an overconfident man. Ever notice unqualified men can get stuff simply by acting like they deserve it? Same here. And while it's infuriating, they just might be onto something, which is why we made this chart of when to follow suit and when to leave them to their testosterone-fueled antics. Scenario: you want a raise and finally got a meeting with your boss to talk about it. What would an overconfident man do? Demand it. I deserve a raise. If I don't get one, I'm quitting. You need me more than I need you. I made you what you are, etc. Should you do that too? Ask for the money, but tone down the entitlement. It's just obnoxious. And back up your claims. So, I deserve a raise becomes, I made the company X last year and fill XYZ important needs. Better, no? All right, scenario. Someone makes a negative comment about your appearance on Instagram. What would an overconfident man do? Not care about it. Continue to post shirtless shots and rock his best duck face. Should you do the same? Totally. But also, block that a-hole. Scenario. You see a sexy person walking down the street. What would an overconfident man do? Scream, "Hello, gorgeous!" Should you do that too? No. Not only has catching never actually worked, or catcalling never actually worked, but it's also rude. Try approaching the hot stranger like a sane person. Scenario. Your apartment has a bug problem, but your super isn't making your case a priority. What would an overconfident man do? Insist on the super's fixing the issue with a call like, "A cockroach is sitting on my counter. Do you want to talk to him on the phone?" Should you do that too? Absolutely. Yes. Do this now. Scenario. you want to start a company. What would an overconfident man do? Try to get funding from anyone who will listen and talk the idea way up. My app is like Hinge, but for people who hate to drive. It'll be bigger than Facebook. Should you do that too? Heck yeah! Believe in yourself and your idea. But unlike this dude, practice and perfect your elevator pitch. Perfect your elevator pitch to get feedback you can use to actually grow this thing. All right. Scenario. You want to sleep with someone and aren't sure the feeling is mutual. What would an overconfident man do? Assume that the feeling is mutual. Who could resist him? And put his pursuit in high gear. Should you do that too? No. Don't do that. That's being predatory. Of course, you're irresistible, but gauge their interest by using your words before going for it. Scenario. At work, drinks, everyone is talking about current events, but you haven't kept up with the news this week. What would an overconfident man do? Syria? Well, my understanding is that... Should you do that too? Don't be a weird liar. Get a juice or just listen and learn. This isn't the Spanish Inquisition. And finally, scenario. You need money. What would an overconfident man do? Rob a bank. Should you do that too? Please don't rob anyone. Okay, and now we're going to go on to how to look like you know the answer when you really super don't. Sometimes you haven't finished the report your boss is looking for, planned that bachelorette party the bride is emailing about, or read the novel your book club is discussing. To avoid any awkwardness, we spoke with some people who know a thing or two about fielding questions. Quote, evade answering the question twice, and people are likely to stop asking after the third time. But that technique won't work with your boss, for instance, so you can say, I don't know, but I'll look into it and get back to you. Period. Don't look worried or like you should have the answer. Nobody has all the answers. And that's from Ruth Sherman, who is a celebrity media coach. Another answer to this, if you're going to BS, commit to your response. Maintain eye contact and don't rush. And it helps to start with something flattering like, sure, also, nice tie, Kirk. And that's from Alex Dixon, improv teacher. And finally from Daniel Watts, a former politician. When asked a tough question, answer the one you wish you'd been asked instead. I ran for office on a one-issue platform of lowering college tuition. So when I was asked about anything else, I directed the question back to tuition. The questioner will usually forget whatever it is they asked or want to move on. All right. So what else? All right, and we're going to do one last one for level one, and next week we'll probably do level two. Okay, so how to stay pleasant in a conversation with someone you totally disagree with. Flipping a table sounds fun, but even if it's a legit reaction, when a date defends their Breitbart obsession, or a friend says she's engaged to a guy you hate, it's not a good look. Rachel McDavid, a psychotherapist who runs anger management workshops, and Gretchen Rubin, author of The Four Tendencies, give tips on keeping cool and all furniture upright in a sticky convo. Take some space. And no, that doesn't mean leaving the room. In real life, you can't storm out of your boss's office during a sour performance review. But you can create mental distance by avoiding eye contact. McDavid suggests looking at the spot between their eyebrows, their mouth, or their nose instead. You'll look engaged even if you're not. Find the positive. Even if you don't agree with a friend's choice, Rubin advises pointing to something specific to demonstrate your support, like you'll plan a great wedding. It'll avoid a fight and keep you from saying how you really feel. I look forward to your divorce in a year. And finally, diffuse tension. Most people just want to feel heard. So if you need to get a tough conversation back on track, McDavid advises using this line. I see. It sounds like what's important to you is... Then shift the focus or head to the bar for a well-deserved drink. And another life hack, I put my phone on airplane mode 30 minutes before bed. It lets me disconnect, and when I wake up, I see only the time, not an anxiety-provoking barrage of messages. And that's from Madison Utendahl, head of content and social at the Museum of Ice Cream. Okay, I'm going to revert back to the December issue of Glamour magazine, because there was a really cool article on Nicole Kidman, the icon, and I thought you would enjoy it. So it starts off, I first met Nicole Kidman about 15 years ago through a mutual friend. I don't remember the exact moment, and neither does she. All I remember about those early days was her kindness and her beauty. Once in London, at a Maud hotel with great lychee martinis, we were both publicizing different movies, and the place was humming with film people. My kids were very young then, sleeping upstairs. My husband and I didn't get out much at that time, and I was enjoying this rare moment. Nicole was sitting opposite me, looking smashing, and I remember being so touched by what she said. It's important that we drink this in and enjoy it, because one day when we're old, we'll have all these wonderful memories. That really struck me. Nicole Kidman doesn't take her life for granted. There is a familiarity that develops between an audience and an actor who has dug as deep into the collective psyche as Nicole has. I felt I knew her even before we met. Her gaze, fierce, piercing, intelligent, has always drilled me to my seat. I can't fidget when she holds the screen. My mind doesn't wander. I suppose this is what they call charisma. The way she hurls herself into her characters is unparalleled, and it's so magnificent to watch, says her friend and Big Little Lies co-star Laura Dern. She allows herself to be all women, but she doesn't lead with shame or insecurity. I, too, am fascinated by the cocktail of talent, craft, and courage that makes Nicole so special. I would go so far as to say she is a character actress in the body of a great beauty. Consider a sampling of the emotions she brings out in her roles. The sociopathic charm in To Die For, 1995. The soul-destroying grief in Birth, 2004. The suicidal genius in The Hours, 2002, for which she won an Oscar. The frightening dissociation in HBO's Big Little Lies, 2017, for which she took home an Emmy. And the chilling reserve in the just-released The Killing of a Sacred Deer, to say nothing of the four major films she has coming out in 2018. The breadth of her work is tremendous. At 50, a mother four times over and a devoted partner to her husband, country singer Keith Urban, she is also an extraordinary instrument of change, one who flexes her personal power not only in the world of motion pictures and television, but as a UN Women Goodwill Ambassador. By using her global visibility to speak out for women who have suffered abuse, Nicole has literally given her voice to the voiceless, says UN Women Communications and Advocacy Chief Nanette Braun. Supporting other women is a central point Nicole returns to again and again, but for her, talking isn't enough. She is all about the doing. I was so glad to be able to ask my friend how she creates her characters and how her feminism informs the choices she makes on and off the screen. Rebecca Miller. Oh, Nicole, so tell me, in the very beginning, was there a moment you realized you were able to communicate so fluently with your emotions? Nicole Kidman. No, that's a lifelong journey. My mother said I was always an intense child, a very sensitive child, so that probably helped the emotions to be very present. I was just a big thinker. I would evaluate and analyze and feel and cry and discuss and be angry. All of those emotions were very surface for me. Were you a physically fearless or cautious kid? I've been told that I had really good fine motor skills, but that my gross motor skills needed some work. I see. You are very refined. I think that's imprinted in me forever. You've got to be very careful what you tell a child. My mom said, well, your handwriting and your drawing is excellent, but walking on the beam and doing the monkey bars is not your forte. And I was like, okay, you're right. What, then, first drew you to acting? I would read. And I would morph into the characters and their emotions. And then I started going to a local drama school when I was like 10 or 11. And even at that age, things would just flow. When my toe would enter the water with something like Nora in A Doll's House, somehow, without really understanding what I was doing, I would grasp the character's inner conflict. It was very pure. I still have that deep passion and love for what I do. And when I don't, I won't do it anymore. I've been thinking about how different all your roles are, like Virginia Woolf in The Hours and Celeste Wright from Big Little Lies are two completely different souls. Well, one's fighting to just exist in the world, for her artistic expression to stay the way she wants it without medication or confinement. And then Celeste is in the situation of being deeply attracted to her abusive husband, but also knowing she has to get out. In some ways, they were both fighting being trapped. Can you tell me how your pledge to work with a female director every 18 months came about? As an actor, you're only as good as the things you're offered, and there just weren't any women offering me things. So when you dissect that, you realize there aren't women offering you things because they don't have the opportunities. I work to raise money for women's cancers. I use my voice for violence against women. And so I was like, I need to be part of the movement that will, hopefully, change the statistics in my field. The more people talk about it, the better it gets. Yes. But I also can't be talking about it and not doing it, because to be an advocate, you have to actually put things into action. It's like, okay, Rebecca, you're making a movie? Let's go. Okay, Karen Kusama, I'm working with her next. We may not have an enormous budget, but let's do it. I'll get down in the trenches with you. My 9-year-old daughter wants to be a director right now. Her whole attitude is, the world's my oyster. She doesn't realize that it's actually not. A little bit of ignorance is, in that way, is good sometimes. If you don't know you're not allowed to do something, you just do it. I think I do that with performing. I don't even think of the risks. I just go. This is totally going to work. Exercising those muscles gives you resilience, and I'm fascinated by resilience in human beings, what people endure and somehow survive. I just bow down to that. How do you tell yourself after so many years in Hollywood, it's okay to keep your heart out? Well, Keith always says to me, you stay raw and sensitive, and I'll buffer things for you, which is a beautiful offering. He is always told, you're so tough. And he says, that's not what I want for you, Nicole. You don't need to get a thick skin. Oh my God, that's sweet. From a partner, isn't it? I think for me, it's about having a place that's safe to nurture you, where the tears can be shed. That way, I can actually go back open and curious and willing. And at times, scarred and a little damaged, but not with a sword like, I'm seeking revenge. Because that just doesn't interest me. I actually never choose films that are about revenge. I choose films I've realized about women who somehow find their way through. And what are Nicole Kidman's words to live by? As long as I've given something the best I can, have really committed, everything else is up to God. And Rebecca Miller is a writer and director based in New York City. Her forthcoming documentary about her father, Arthur Miller, writer, will air on HBO next year, which is our year, 2018, so we'll be on the lookout for it. Well, we have run out of time for today's episode of Teen Magazine. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Anika Gal, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, triangleradioreadingservice.org. Today's programming is underwritten with support from the Raleigh Kiwanis Foundation. They can be reached by kiwanisfoundation.org. So long until next time. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. Make it a great week.